Imagine acres of ruined, corroded, and broken household and industrial objects piled in mountains so high and dense that it's nearly impossible to get your footing. A vast junkyard that is being constantly transformed by mice, squirrels, bees, beetles, ants, and worms. This may sound disturbing or even repulsive to you, but it's a world of great beauty to my guest Rosamund Purcell. She's a photographer and writer. Her new book, Owl's Head, is about a junkyard near Rockland, Maine, where she's visited dozens of times over the past 20 years, and from which she has taken home thousands of objects. She became friends with its eccentric owner, William Buckminster. Purcell also did the photographs for the recent book about their Mutter Museum, and for Ricky Jay's book about his collection of decaying dice. I asked how Owl's Head compares to your typical junkyard, beyond its sheer volume.
It wasn't filthy. It didn't have a sort of an urban feeling of oozing oil and grease and sort of filth. It had a clean feeling to it because it had been the place itself was located on a peninsula and salt water on all sides, on three sides, and the wind was damp and apt to be full of fog, and you knew that there had been many years of weather, and these pieces of metal, mainly metal, had been changed into beautiful patina, especially the copper under the salt air. So it was really quite peaceful, and it was quite beautiful, in spite of the fact that these were debris from our all-American civilization.
What did you find beautiful about this huge collection of junk and rusted objects?
Well, of course, you know, beauty is a matter of opinion. And for years, I had been used to working in the back rooms of natural history museums with fragments of finding photographic excitement in fragments of things. So when I say beautiful, I think maybe I was drawn to those useful objects that were would no longer work particularly, would no longer function the way they were supposed to, like a clock or a flashlight, but that they had been battered and they had their colors had changed. I mean, in particular, copper is a wonderful it receives the effects of weather beautifully. It turns green and has a sort of an ancient look to it. So I think it was partly that familiar objects had been made into instant, or sort of not instant, but into rather rapid antiques. And then also those things which almost looked like something still looked like something, but you could not use it. That was very interesting to me.
That's one of the things I find fascinating about the objects that you've claimed from this, judging from the photographs in the book. And I should say, the book is largely text, but there are a few photographs. They look like relics, but from our own culture, from contemporary times. You have this fantastic photograph in there of a manual typewriter that is almost totally corroded. You could barely make out what it is. But, like, you know the bars that the letters are on the manual typewriter?
Yes.
They're like a little bent and decayed so that they look like almost the spindly legs of a weird insect or a crab-like thing or an animal. It almost looks like it was once alive.
Well, that's really, I'm glad you noticed that particular one, because when I found that typewriter, which, by the way, is just a rusted keyboard, and who knows what manufacture it was, but I actually dug it out of the mud, and it really reminded me of a sort of a fossil echinoid or something. I mean, that's one of those sea urchins, you know. It has a ribbing that, as you say, was very much like an animal rather than an object, and I think it is this sort of crossover quality also to these objects that I responded to, that they were no longer just manufactured because nature had, I mean, the elements had worked on them, and they became increasingly, many of them, more and more as if nature had half-formed them, so that they were almost becoming natural. You see what I mean? Sort of rather than a typewriter that had been made in a factory, this was a typewriter that had been worked on by the soil and by the rain and the wind and had come out to be just a shell of itself.
It must take a lot out of you, as much as you love the materials, going through the materials in this junkyard. You write, the act of going through it, I encounter layer upon layer of gnawed and masticated lumps, stuff that causes allergic reactions, wheezing, sneezing, and rashes. What's it like picking through all of this, like an archaeologist, but it's just this like kind of rusted, decaying, maybe maggot-eaten kind of stuff.
Well, I have to say that I have an aversion to anything that might be maggot-eaten, and I think I also make it rather clear in the book that there's certain kinds of materials that really are too much for me. Well, I'm not really looking at things that are decaying. I mean, I suppose they are, so much as things that are desiccated. That is, that things that have been that really have been altered by being outside. But often, of course, I will find something that is in the process of, well, how can I put it? Appearance is very important. The way something looks, the way, if something reminds me of something else that I may have seen that is not what I am looking at. And you're right, I mean, going through these things is not necessarily great for the health. I'm not particularly allergic to things, but I think more than the allergies, it is really difficult to climb around on these mountains of slippery objects or objects that have been just thrown on top of each other. They're not meant to be on top of each other, but there they are, sort of at random.
How much have you brought back to your studio from this junkyard?
Well, I have a studio that's almost 1,000 feet square, but I think I've brought back relatively little, even though it's full. I know that's strange, but there was so much there. How much? Thousands of objects, I would say. Thousands of objects if you count all the very small things, and then sheets of scrap metal, and many ruined books, because I found the ruined books completely compelling. I'm a book person anyway, and I gradually instantly was fascinated by books that were not in good condition, because they represented a different kind of book than I'd ever seen before.
Why don't you describe one of those books?
The book that became the object that really kept me going back to Buckminster's was something that we found, that one of the students found on our first trip there to Buckminster's property. And that was a book that was half book, half nest. It was two volumes that had been glued together by the weather, and one end of it had been turned into a fluffy nest of syllables and straw, so that it was very, very poignantly an object that was half natural and half man-made. And that is exactly the kind of object that was amazing to me. And I dug down into the straw and the syllables to see what the title of the top book was, and it was Flying Hostesses of the Air. And I just thought that was great, this sort of pulp fiction and this sort of way of turning it into fodder for the young.
Can you talk a little bit about how these objects look in the more controlled environment of your studio, as opposed to how they look in the kind of messy outdoor environment of the junkyard?
Well, I think that like any collector who has sort of honed their senses to look for certain qualities, when I find something at Buckminster's and pick it up, I know pretty well why it is that I want to keep it. And when it's back in the studio, it's supposed to look just about like that. It shouldn't change. One of the other reasons why I collect these things is because they are not what they used to be so much as suggestive of other things that they could be. So when I was, I've been trained as a photographer, self-trained as a photographer, and when I began, I listened to the words of the late Minor White, who used to say to photograph things for what else they are, to show things for what else they are. And these objects often suggest other times and places to me, so that they are historically free to be manipulated or to be turned into fictional objects.
Do you remember any visual nightmares you had when you were young, where like the scary thing about the nightmare was how something looked?
Well, I can tell you, not so much a nightmare, but I can tell you that one of my father's friends liked to come and tell us bedtime stories. And one of the scariest ones he ever told to me was the one about Theseus, who went off from Athens to kill the Minotaur and returned home. And his father had said, "If you return home with white sails, I will know that you were successful. And if your men return home and the sails are black, I will know that you died." And they forgot to change the sails in the story that I was told. And this awful feeling of a father sitting on a cliff and seeing his son coming home, and his son was coming home, but the sails hadn't been changed, they were black, and so his father killed himself. At least that was the story. What a bedtime story, huh?
Oh, sweet dreams, yeah.
Yeah, right. I don't know, that was the one that came to mind.
Right, okay. But
I think, you know, I guess people would say, well, don't you have bad dreams? And I would say, well, I'm sure, yes, of course I have bad dreams, but I think that what it is if you really just look at these things during the day, and those things, by the way, Terry, I'm interrupting here, those things which I remember being too afraid to look at are those things which I did not photograph and in museums and which haunt me to this day. It is not the things that I actually spent time with and really considered. There's something that I remember from a medical museum that I couldn't even look at it, and I regret it.
What was it?
Oh. Well, it was a veil. It was a veil, but it was a human being, and I just couldn't deal with something that was that. It seemed to be a veil, and to have all the features of a human being. And I cannot tell you more. Oh, it's awful. But, you know, I could have taken a picture, and then we could look at it, and then we could talk about it.
Are there any images that you've seen that, even as a professional photographer, you averted your eyes from because they were too upsetting?
Oh, well, I'm not very good, although I admire more than any other aspect of photography, documentary photography. I am not very good with war pictures, looking at war pictures. I'm certainly not good at looking at pictures of torture. I don't like seeing people hurting each other. Let me see. Certainly no medical. I'm not really interested in poring through books of medical diseases or skin diseases, pathological conditions, although I am interested in medicine in a way. I don't think that my view of the objects from the junkyard and from the museums really is a gruesome view. I think that these are things that are benighted and changed and other than what they were, but I don't think that they are grotesque. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rosamund Purcell, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Rosamund Purcell's new book is called Owl's Head. An exhibition of her work called Two Rooms will be at the Mount Holyoke College Art Museum through March 14th. You can take a virtual tour of the show through a link on our website, freshair.com.